This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Hi, guys. Good morning.
How you doing? Thank you for my gifts. I love this. Wow, we could get started right away. Wow, no jokes, nothing. Right, like, my God.
Just ask a question, because it's a small room. I know we need to screw around the microphone since it's stuck over there in the corner.
Do you guys like it?
Yeah.
Rock.
Michael, I know all of my colleagues are going to have wonderful Transformers questions, so I wanted to know your reaction to Hot Fuzz, which was so inspired by Bad Boys 2. And that you said you were offered Die Hard 4 and was wondering if this hadn't come together, would you have considered doing that?
Die Hard 4? No, I don't think so. Hot Fuzz, I haven't seen it yet because I was finishing this movie. It's really hard at the end of your post schedule. It's such a grind. Seeing a movie is like the last thing you want to do when you go home. I thought this would be like an easy post. On our budget, we had a hiatus scheduled in here for, because I said, oh my God, I have the longest post schedule. So I didn't think the robots would be that hard. But I was directing them all the way to the very end. So,
Michael, there seems to be so many disparate elements of this movie. And I'm just wondering how you balance the needs of your vision as a filmmaker with those of Spielberg and those of fans. And there's a lot of things that you have to consider when doing this, because I noticed there are definitely some Spielberg elements to this film, and of course the fanboys are pretty...
Well, I mean, listen, I make my own movie. I don't have someone tell me what to do. I've always been inspired by Steven. I was not a Transformer fan before I signed on to this movie. And I think I was 2 years older when the toys came out, so I just discovered Girls Inn instead of Optimus Prime. I quickly became, after I went to Hasbro, where you heard about that Transformer school, I'm really thinking, what the fuck am I going to Hasbro for Transformer school? I thought I was going to learn how to fold up robots, but I met with the CEO and I went through the whole Transformer lore, and I was... I've been offered a lot of superhero movies before, and nothing's really appealed to me. And, in the room, because I've been such a fan of Japanese anime, it just hit me that if I make this really real, it could be something very new and different. And so I quickly became probably one of the bigger Transformer fans in the world. And I tried to make this movie for non-Transformer fans, okay? I wanted it to be a little bit more, if you could say, adult. So I'm sure I'm going to get flack for you made an edgy movie on a toy. What are you going to do? How's that going to affect kids? And I know there are Transformer fans that are like 40 years old. Now that I'm rambling.
Michael, one thing I kept hearing from this movie from the actors is what a great actor's director Michael Bay is, which seems to be a whole new theme that we haven't really heard before. Did you do something different?
Here's the soundbite. The press is very, it's very weird, because what soundbite gets out there, Michael Bay yells. It's like, listen, I am very similar. I visited Jim Cameron on Titanic. I'm very similar to the way he directs. He's an assistant director. I'm an assistant director of my own sets. I move my own sets. I shoot very fast. I never leave the set. I love working with actors. I love giving actors freedom. I love improvising with actors. It freaks studios out because they're like, that wasn't in the script. That wasn't in the script. What's this? He's wrecking the movie. And I'm like, trust me, it's going to be funny. Because there's a whole issue of tone in this movie. When I'm doing action scenes, I'm going to be your worst nightmare basketball coach. That's to get the energy and the adrenaline going. And so
you've always let them improvise. How much of what we see would you say was improvised here? And what about the Armageddon joke that we get in the movie?
Well, that's just me. I'm like, okay, we gotta. This kid is so funny running. I'm like, dude, you gotta say this, all right? He's just funny. So you guys all laughed, all right? I'll often add jokes along the way. Like a perfect example, because I will always hire actors that have a good improv skill, like Nick Cage in The Rock. There was really nothing funny in The Rock in the script, and that was all through improv and just trying to work with the guys and try to make it funny. like a good example in this scene was when they knocked, the parents knocked on the door of the bedroom when he's hiding the robots. In the script it said, maybe he's M-A-S, and like that was a joke. And that's pretty lame. So we actually brought him in the room and we just started this whole masturbation talk. And that's because the mom is such an amazing, you know, New York, she's in New York plays and...
she just won the Tony Award.
Did she really?
Best actress in a play, beat Angela Lansbury and Vanessa Redgrave.
Really? Wow, congratulations.
Julie White.
Yeah, I know it's Julie White, yes.
So, Michael, I believe it was Don Murphy said you had no nostalgia for these Transformers. And does that make it easier?
He said I have no...
Nostalgia.
Right.
Does that make it easier to make the film like a doctor operating on a stranger versus a...
Well, listen, I'm a huge Transformer fan now. I can officially say I've probably thought more about robots on Earth than anyone in the past year and a half. But, I actually think that because I wasn't a fan, I think makes it more accessible to other people. You know, does that make sense?
You're coming in fresh the way people who aren't familiar with it.
Right, and you know, like Megatron was a gun, and I'm like, oh, that does stuff, it's got to be, I don't get that. And, you know, I did get a lot of flack from fans on the net, like, Michael Bay, you wrecked my childhood. Michael Bay, you suck. We're going to protest at his office. They protest at my old office, apparently. That's true. You know, the death threats freak me out, but, you know, I think I would listen to fans on the net. I really would. I would kind of hear their comments. And but I'm still going to make my movie, and I'm still put flames on Optimus.
That helped actually.
It did, right? You see?
When they were fighting, I said, okay, that's Optimus.
Okay. But you gave him lips.
Well, because you know what? We did a lot of studies, and it's just it's facial studies, and it just emotion is so hard without that kind of movement. You know, so. We tried it solid. It just didn't look right.
Now, Michael, I have to ask. There's talk that they're hoping maybe to get Transformers 2, if this one is a success, as everyone's assuming it's going to be, sometime next year. But aren't you going to be busy with Prince of Persia before you...
I don't know. I leave my negotiation open because the president of Paramount's right behind you. So he could probably kill me. I don't know what I'm doing right now. There's no script right now.
But you are directing Prince of Persia?
I don't know. No, I don't. I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Really?
I really don't know what I'm doing. That's I'm unemployed right now. I finished the movie like a week ago, so.
Lady in the back.
Oh, thank you. I wanted to ask, you had mentioned the tone of the film. And I was wondering how you managed to balance between what seems to be I don't mean routine, but a somewhat normal, recognizable action film with the Transformers.
I mean, you know, when Steven called me like a year and a half ago, he said, I want you to direct Transformers. It's a story about a boy who buys his first car. To me, that was a great hook. I hung up and said, thank you. And I said, I'm not doing that stupid, silly toy movie. But I thought about it. The hook was great because that's such a launching ground from a young adult into manhood or, you know, womanhood. It's just I like the simplicity of it, okay? And it just made it somewhat more accessible. I mean, if you notice, I shot this movie very kind of generic. I mean, I've never in my life shot at a Burger King, okay? You know, or a guy riding on a pink bicycle, or a house that's kind of like very suburbia. But it just makes it more acceptable and accessible to the ultra slick Uber action around it. And that's kind of the charm of the movie is, to me, in thinking about it, was I kept having this image of this kid trying to hide robots from his parents by his house, and that just stuck in my head as we were writing the script. So, to me, that was the whole charm of it. I don't think he even answered your question. But.
That's all right, but I got the guy right here. Go ahead.
I'm fine.
Go
ahead.
Michael, I think it's safe to say you didn't get the reaction you hoped for with The Island. I'm just wondering, does that affect how you directed this movie?
You know, I like The Island, and, the thing is, the reaction of The Island, it worked really well overseas, and... You know, I knew it would never be a smash because it's not that type of movie. And I continually have so many people that come up to me and say, God, that movie is so good. But no one knew about it in America. I mean, I asked 500 people before it came out. They didn't even know when it was coming out. When you saw our poster campaign, we had a muddled campaign. I knew we were in trouble with that movie domestically like 4 months out. And I kept saying you should go with the Warner's campaign, which did the foreign. So it was a whole kind of microcosm study of studio marketing.
Did you change your attitude in directing? Did you think maybe you had to just change your style at all or do anything?
No. You know, the thing is, you get right back on the horse again. There's so many directors that, oh, it didn't open. Oh, my God, I'm over. And it's like, you know what? Screw it. Get back on the horse. Let's go. You know? So I finished The Island. 3 weeks later, I was doing Transformers.
Hi, Michael. Can you talk a little bit about the casting of Shia and also what you see as the underlying theme or message, if there is one in this movie?
Well, the underlying theme to me is really no sacrifice, no victory. I mean, that was something I wanted to nail. I thought it was my movies often deal with the hero archetype and, you know, the boy becoming a man, kind of like Nick Cage becoming a hero in The Rock, or Shia, same thing. It's just kind of when he got to carry that cube and sacrifice his life. Your first question was casting Shia. You know, it's very scary when you're trying to hinge a whole movie on a kid, and I had seen him in that. I had only seen one of his movies, Constantine. All right, and I thought he's interesting, but he looks so old. And someone said, Ian Bryce, one of my producers, says you should look at this kid, Shia. And I'm like, okay. He was coming in. I saw some of his other movies, and I really liked him. And then I talked to Steven. Steven said, I'm seeing Shia. And he goes, oh, yeah, he's great. I love Shia. And he came in for the audition, and he nailed it. And I liked his just improv skill. I liked how he was very able to take direction and mold. And he was kind of, you know, I didn't want the geek, you know. I mean, what I like about Shia, when I think every guy's been in that circumstance by the pond or the lake where the stud comes up to you and gives you shit. And instead of doing, he comes right back with wit and humor. And every guy likes him right then and there, I think. I mean, do you guys think so? You know? I don't think there's a kid today that could have done a better job. So
I'm curious to know.
He's a pain in the ass to work with, let me tell you. Let me tell you a funny story. I always like to put my actors in real circumstances, and we had him. There was a 17-story building downtown by the statue, and my producer says, "How do you want to shoot that?" He goes, "We're gonna do a blue screen, right?" I said, "Nah, fuck, we're gonna put him up there," and we put him on wires, all right, and we rigged it very safe. But there was only 4 inches to stand on, and Shia's like, "Yeah, I think I can do it. I'm gonna go up there." So we're ready to go, and he goes, and mind you, I would never go out there on my own. I would never do this. But he goes, oh, man, I can't get up there. I can't get up there. I'm saying, dude, you're going to embarrass yourself in front of the whole crew. All right? You get paid way more than those kids on Fear Factor. Get the fuck up there. So he did it. And, I mean, it was really scary. But it's, you know, he was on cloud nine when he did it. So
Michael, I'm wondering, do you ever foresee a time where you might want to do a little intimate, low-budget character study of some kind?
No, I've got this one. I keep trying to do it called Pain and Gain. It's really a funny character story. I keep talking about it. We're going to be here next year. We're going to talk about it again. You know, and it's like I just keep getting gas to do these big movies. And sometimes it's a fear of, like, our big movie's going to go away. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, Hollywood, it's kind of tough right now. So, I don't know.
It's
very Pulp Fiction-y, true story. It's about these knuckleheads that kidnap and murder, searching for the American dream in all the wrong ways. It's very funny. All true.
You should do it.
Yeah.
Guy right here in the tan shirt.
Michael, we've seen how James Cameron went from making huge physical action films into 3D, where he's now doing computer-generated 3D films.
Could you ever see yourself moving in that direction?
Honestly, I think I'd want to shoot myself working on a blue screen stage. I mean, I did like maybe 1-2 days of blue screen on this movie. I just hate it. It's just, I like doing things real, and it's just, I just, it's really hard to go there, you know?
All the way in the back, Lady Brown.
Did 9/11 change the way you make action movies? I kept thinking of 9/11 through the last action tableau with the plane flying through the building.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if that sort of even entered your mind at any point.
Are you kidding, lady? Well, I mean, that's a silly question. Of course it entered my mind, you know? It's like, I don't even want to go there. So let's go on to the next question.
We're here in the
Yachty.
You and the
stupid. Talk about boy in his car, boy by the lake. But I like the women in it because they weren't just hot babes, although they were. That's what the guys I was getting was off. But I saw that they were also brainy and stuff. How conscious were you trying to appeal to a female audience if you were? Were Josh and Tyrese chosen for being eye candy?
You know, I actually met with Josh for one of my Platinum Dunes movies, and I really liked him. Got a sense of him in the room there. That was like 4 months prior, and this thing came up. It was, you know, it was a very efficient budget. I honestly didn't, I had no money for stars, so I had to be very creative in picking people that I thought were going to break. You know, I've after meeting him, I really liked him, so wanted to work with him.
And so working with the women, like Julie White's character was great, too. I mean, they're great women.
Awesome.
In the movie, right?
Well, awesome. I mean, you know, it's just, she didn't have that many lines in the movie, and I just kept, you know, Kevin and her were just, you know, funny. We just kept doing stuff, and, you know, I just love his blue-collar sensibility, and I've always wanted to do that joke with the grass. That's my that's my lawyer. He does that to his kids. He doesn't let them go on the grass. And so, you know. And
so you were thinking about your female audience.
Of course, yeah.
The gentleman in the yellow shirt.
I wanted to know, as a filmmaker, you seem to get more of your budget on screen than almost anyone else. You get $150 million, it looks like $250 million. What's your secret?
My secret is I shoot very, very fast. An average director will shoot 20 setups a day. I do about 75, and they're real setups. It's not like we work 12-hour days. I don't go overtime, but we work very hard. I work with my same crew. I gave 30% of my fee because they were going to ship me to Canada and Australia, and I said, no, I want to shoot with my guys. And it's a team that I've worked with for like close to 16 years, and it's just, you know, I like keeping movies in Los Angeles if I could, and especially keep them in the States. The money, we just save so much money because I have really good people. And I don't know, we just make it an efficient day, you know? And I think music videos give me a sense of I'm able to shoot fast, and like when the shit hits the fan, which it always does on a movie, you got to figure out your plan A and B. I do this system called Leapfrog. I mean, like I said, the whole AD thing that gets out there, Michael Bay yells, Michael Bay's being the assistant director, okay, 3 shots, we're doing this, and I want you to prep that, blah, 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 you know, so we're leapfrogging. We're almost ready for the next shot. It's almost hard. Actors don't even go back to their trailers, if you've probably already heard. Tyrese, put your clothes back on! You know, he would always take his clothes back. I'll hold clothes off. And, you know, that's a lot of stuff to put back on, you know? So, I don't know. I guess that's the way.
Guy in the green plaid.
A couple of quick comments and a question. Being someone who wasn't familiar with Transformers other than knowing that it existed, I thoroughly enjoyed the movie.
Thank you.
You got a smash on your hands.
Well, we don't trust the movie gods, you know.
Well, take it from me. Also, the fact that you brought on three African-American performers, I really appreciate that.
I've had good luck with that, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What?
You'll be commended for that.
Right.
But getting back to the thing about tone of the movie, I think that's probably, beyond the actors, probably to me, the key to the success of the movie. So just wondering, how did you guys arrive at the tone? Because it's to me the perfect thing about the movie.
You know, I think it was just my gut. You know, I knew that, you know, it's Transformers. You can't take it too seriously, but you wanted to keep it. You wanted to give that sense of realism, you know. That's why the military involvement was very important, that we make it very real and credible. Like those guys in the AWACS, those are all the real guys. I told them, this is what's going down on the ground. What would you say? And literally within 2 minutes, they were, bam, 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 bam. I just photographed what they said. And, you know, so I think you mix the realism with Tyrese being in the worst situation, and he says, man, if you could see this shit. I mean, that sounds real, but it comes in a funny way. And, you know, I made little jabs here and there, like, you know, that's way too smart for Iranian scientists, you know. You know, I mean, how much do you get bugged by this outsourcing calls, you know, the calls out there? I mean, it just bugs me. You know, when I forget to pay my AT&T bill, I get a call and you, Mr. Bay! And they're calling from Bombay, and I'm like, I didn't pay it, you know? Anyway.
Lady right here.
Michael over here. Tyrese made a joke, you know, saying that he was like, you know, running and going, you know, dodging cars and everything, and then at the end he had to say his line, and there was a bomb exploding, and so I'm wondering, you're known as this really bold acting director, but you somehow managed to get real emotion in an action film, so what is more important for you, and what's, you know, is there a balance that you're seeking between story and action?
Yeah, I mean, you want it to feel real, and what I try to do is, especially when actors are doing action stuff, I give it's the crew jokes. Ian, don't you call it Bayos, right?
Bayos is one of them.
No, but you try to have a little bit of chaos. It's very organized, but you get them a little fritzed, you know, because it just gives them more adrenaline. You know, it's a little bit of the unknown, you know, they will have a lot of loud bombs and stuff like that on the set, if that's what it calls for. I like to, you know, see the real emotion when they're inside, you know, these action scenes, you know.
So what's more important for you, story or action, or do you...
No, I mean, it's both. It's a balance, you know. I mean, it's both.
Curious about, you said that you are your own AD and your assistant director. So is that because of the scale of the project, or do you haven't found people who work at the pace that you would like them to? Or because, you know, you have a team. I'm just curious, why do you feel the need to be your
own? I just love it. I don't know. It's just my thing. It just keeps me interested. It keeps me, you know, I mean, my thing is I'll get to set usually 45 minutes after everyone's there because I don't like people, you know, watching them eat burritos and you know, their eggs. I'm like, I want to go to work. And it's like, so they always on the radio, they go, Bay's coming in hot. He's coming in hot. But it just keeps me really involved. It's just my thing. I don't know. That's the creative part for me. Sorry.
Tell us a little bit about what was going on in your head last night in the theater.
Well, I got to apologize because the print was way oversaturated, meaning way too much color. It was way too red, so I was having a freak out on that. So we're trying to figure out what the problem was. Is it a bad projector or something? I thought it was fun. I mean, it really, when, you know, I said you guys are the first in the United States to see this. It was true, you know? So,
was it loud enough for you?
Yeah, I turned it down. I said, turn it down.
Is it an nerve-wracking experience watching on the screen? First time.
Yes, it's so nerve-wracking. It's like, you want me to describe the testing process? real quick, I do little focus groups on my own. You know, I'll take like 30 kids and I'll do a little screening room. I'll do like 9-year-olds to 15-year-olds, and I've did like 16-year-olds, 25-year-olds. I have someone that has nothing to do with the movie. He comes in and say, you can say whatever you want about this movie. I show them in rough form. They were great because they'll fill out little pages of what's confusing them, what lines they thought sucked, you know. I mean, they're very blunt about it. And there was something where they hated Megan. She said one line, and the women just turned off. And I'm like, we got to deal with that. So then I get to the big test in Phoenix where we did like 450 people. It was all families. And I'm like, ah, the kids are cute because they're applauding at different things, you know. Then, you know, it's a, oh, they all laughed at the masturbation thing. They're all 9 years old, which, you know, like, yeah. I don't know. Much be younger now. I'm like, okay, that went well. And then I went out and I went to the adult screening next door, introduced that, and I'm doing the little sound button thing, you know. This guy sitting next to me goes, what's that? I said, just a sound. He goes, what do you do? I said, I'm the director. Oh, so the movie started. They were like laughing, applauding at certain things. And I'm thinking, oh, this sucks. This movie sucks. It's a kiddie movie, all right? And I said to the guy, I said, do you like this type of movie? And he goes, eh, you know. I'm like, oh, this is over. All right, it's a kid movie. So all these emotions go through your head, you know. And we did a focus group. I ran out. We did a focus group with the kids and the parents and, like, the focus group, 26 out of 26 gave an excellent. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Our scores were gigantic. I'm like, okay, that's because it's a kid movie. Then I went to the adult focus group, and then we got the same score. We got like a 95, and I'm like, that's weird. I mean, a lot of the older ladies, like 35, 40, they're like, I didn't want to come here. I didn't want to see this. I was dragged here. And it's true. And this one lady, she goes, this kind of reinvents superheroes, because she said a great line. She goes, it's like we're tired of the suits and the capes and the whatever. I mean, this is totally new and different. So anyway, that was – it's right still nerve-wracking. You know what I'm saying?
Thanks.
That's a long, boring answer.
John Turturro mentioned that he based a lot of his character on you. I'm wondering if that's something you guys discussed and what you felt about.
No, I was scared to work with John Turturro. You know, I was like, oh, John. He came out like a little quirky. When he had that hat, that was the first day I worked with him at the dam. I'm like, okay, I don't know about this. I don't know. I don't know. I grew to really like working with John. I don't know if he based it on me. I just... I do think criminals are hot, by the way. No, I'm kidding. I don't know if he based it on me. He said that, but you should see his Scorsese imitation. It's one of the best I've ever seen.
Gentlemen, right here.
Michael, some of this movie plays almost like a recruiting video for the military. You have a pretty good relationship with him. Can you talk about the element, the military elements in the film that it seems like... You said grounded the film more in reality.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, if you're going to have, you've got to have the external alien invasion. And then to make it credible, you're going to have military. And I just don't like when you see, like, an Independence Day and they don't get military support. And you've got, like, a few Jeeps and you got this and everything's kind of mismatched and it's all digital planes and it's, like, it's just not credible, you know. And so you needed that reality so you can ground this little kid story. You know, I've had a good relationship with him on Armageddon and Pearl, so I somehow convinced them that this is the largest cooperation since Black Hawk and Pearl for them. And the line Phil Stroob, who's the liaison at the Pentagon, he's like, "Well, you know, if aliens do land, I mean, the U.S. military should be involved." You know, and I'm like, "That's appropriate." So. But I'm always good at weaseling stuff that's never been shot, like the F-22 and all that stuff. And I think they like me because I really respect the military, and I respect the soldiers, you know, the people, men and women, that really will sacrifice themselves. And those guys around Josh and Tyrese, they're all the real guys. They're all special ops SEALs, and it's fascinating. I mean, I'm just enamored with people that will really go to combat. It's just it's a wild thing.
And you
know?
Have a lot of equipment and ships and planes.
But, you know, it's if you look at the theme, no sacrifice, no victory, I think that's the way they see it. And they just want to be treated credibly. You know, they want it to be shown in a real light. You know, if you're fighting Scorponox, how would they do an airstrike? And so we literally show you exactly how it happens, you know. So.
And are they retired?
No.
SEALs and ops?
No, those are guys that have either taken a leave. I mean, some of them were going to actually get called back to Iraq. And then this is the thing that happens to all of them, they get the Hollywood bug. We called one of them Hollywood. He trains U.S. SEALs down in Coronado. And I said, dude, just go back to being a SEAL. So,
Angela?
I'm just going to ask you about the GM's involvement in the introduction of the Camaro through this.
Okay, I mean, I had $145 million. I needed to find a car company that can give me a bunch of vehicles and save $3 million. And I opened it up to every car company. And I have a relationship with GM because I've done commercials for them. They've helped me on my other movies by giving me flood-damaged cars. These are cars that have to be destroyed. They took me to Skunk Works, which is where they do the prototype cars. It's a secret place somewhere. And I saw that car, and I'm like, that's Bumblebee. And so, you know, it's you know, it helped save $3 million, and it was a great-looking car. And
we heard there was a GM guy on set who wouldn't let them smudge the leather, but when he wasn't around, you raced the car through gravel at 140 miles.
No, that's completely bull. No, no, we did have the one prototype. The prototypes are really hard because they cost like $5 million to make. We made our own. We had the CAD files with that car out there, which is a Saleen chassis. And we made it like in 6 weeks in Detroit, really fast. So,
all right, and this is the last question we're going to grab.
Let's have a couple more.
Right.
How do you change as a filmmaker throughout the past?
Gotten older, crankier. No, I'm not cranky. I don't. I actually don't. I crack a lot of jokes, so I tease people.
Is that new?
Nah, a little bit. But what we
how do you change from us? I mean, does this movie? It isn't very different, do you think, to its predecessors, Peter?
I mean, someone said to me in Australia, said, after The Island, did you want to go back to your more safe roots? And I just thought this idea, if it was done in a cool way, could be a big idea, and a fun movie idea, and a fun summer movie. And I like the challenge of taking something that hasn't been done and trying to... working with my team of artists for months, 8 months, 9 months, and my digital effects companies, and to try to create characters that made out of thin air. And it was something really challenging for me to do. It's like doing an animated movie, you know? Working with animators is such a great process. And the end result, it's like you look at these things, and like you look at Bumblebee, and there looks like there's a soul inside this thing, you know? And so that was a fun challenge for me.
Speaking of that, the scene in the backyard is so wonderful, and so much of that is comic timing with these four characters who aren't going to be there until much later. How did you create that comic timing now?
Well, what I do is I do a series of animatics, which are crude cartoons, and a movie really comes to life. I mean, we're working with the writers on creating a script, but it all starts down with the concept drawings, you know, and it's like that becomes the tone of the movie. I mean, I showed Steven a picture of Megatron in the hangar, and he goes, oh, my God, I love that. That's the movie. And I'm like, I know. And that's how you get the tone, you know, and it's like you build off of there. And so in the backyard, we kept coming up with the beats and whatnot. I think the dog peeing was something we made up. That's where we tied a little string to his leg and lifted it up to nothing there, and they added in the squirt. And, you know, it's just really good to work with someone like a Shia or Megan, where they can actually see a cartoon and they're looking at window washer poles, which is tough. And you know, you just keep doing it. So,
Betsy,
Michael, which directors do you like?
Ugh, God, I mean, everyone always asks me this question. It's just, you know, from Kubrick to you know, I've always been a huge fan of the Coen brothers, you know? I mean, Raising Arizona was such an instrumental film in, like, how I've done some of my commercials and, you know, just that comic timing. A lot of people didn't get that movie when it came out, you know? But I just, you know, from Steven to Cameron to Scorsese, you know, when I was young, like, probably heard. I worked at Lucasfilm. When I was 15, I was like a librarian, and I filed Raiders of the Lost Ark storyboards. And that was how I got interested in the business. So,
is there a microphone?
No.
No. Okay. I want to ask you a Michael Bay question. Since you are you did just take a very brief trip down memory lane there, talking about 15.
Right.
But what about when you were sort of like 10 or 8 or something? Who or what inspired you to, I don't know, believe in yourself enough to actually follow this idea that you could do something? Who was it, and what did they tell you?
Who was it?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, when I was young, I wanted to be a veterinarian. And I remember raising money because they took me to a place where they gassed the dogs and cats, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe this exists in the world. I had many different interests. I wanted to be a magician, you know, so I was inspired by that. I realized there's no money in being a magician, so I gave it up, and I liquidated all my tricks to another competing group that was 12.
But you continued to dream. Who said, hey, Michael, keep doing it?
You know, I think it was my parents, really. I mean, they kind of encouraged me to do art, and I bought a camera when I was 13. And I just love taking pictures, and so it was really my parents. I mean, my dad was an accountant, and you know, it's a. I remember this is funny. When I was young, I was a big baseball player, but I had this model train set, and I would go into my world. I made a very detailed HO gauge train set, and I remember one summer I spent 8 months building this thing, fully detailed, and I'd go into my imaginary world. And my dad and mom came into the bedroom one day. They go, son, we think you need to get out more.
Gentlemen in the yellow shirt, then back in the peach or whatever that color is.
So that's where I started imagining. I think the train sets is where I kind of made my own little movies in my head.
Yeah,
so.
And then you just took it outside down the street for a walk, and it worked.
We'll see.
After this film is a monster hit, are you going to be willing to jump back in and do a sequel? And have you already thought about what characters you'd like to introduce in the next film?
I mean, I've got some really cool stuff that I came up with in the first one that was just too expensive. Stuff, yeah, really cool. But Stephen was right. No, we should pull back and not have as many robots, and so you can really focus more. I mean, I wish I got into some of the faces more of some of the robots. But it was really Stephen who said, I think we should just make it like 5 against 5 or 5 against 6 or something like that. So it was good that, you know, that we scaled back a bit, you know.
Would you be willing to jump right back in and do a sequel?
You know, maybe a little break. But we've got to come up with a good story first.
Okay, all the way in the back.
Michael?
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
You were talking about Tyrese earlier. I know you said that.
He kept taking his underwear off in front of me. I don't know what that was about. You know? No, I'm kidding.
Talk about having him in this film and what he brings to the film.
Tyrese is, I remember, I think he came on my set at Bad Boys when we were in Florida. And he just said to me, I want to be in one of your movies one day. And Martin Lawrence is like, yeah, you wait till you get him one of his movies. You fucking hate him. No, I'm kidding. So I don't know. I just I thought about him when we were casting this, and I thought it was a good idea to couple Josh with somebody, you know. So it kind of worked out, you know. I guess I didn't really answer that question.
Maybe. What was it about him?
You know, I just he's got this great smile. He's this sweet guy. He's like, you know, there's something studly about him. I just thought he's accessible, you know.
So. Michael, they're telling me I need to start wrapping up the movie.
Okay.
One or two more?
Okay. Yeah.
In the back?
Well, your special effects gentleman, Scott, said that this is the first giant robot movie live action that he can think of. Were you conscious of that? Were you conscious of creating a new subgenre? And did that give you any kind of freedom?
Well, it's just, let me tell you, these robots didn't come out good at first. I mean, it was hard. I mean, it was not all peaches and cream at ILM. I mean, there was a lot of angry phone calls like, we have to do better, we have to do better. Because they thought they were settling on something, and I'm like, nope, this is unacceptable. And I just kept pushing them and pushing them and pushing them. And, you know, but we came up with a really good, you know, visual thing. I wanted them not to be clunky, lumbering robots. I mean, I looked at a lot of, you know, kung fu movies. I wanted them to have a different type of movement. And so I would just clip different things from different movies, and I'd reference those to the animators, how they should move. What was your question again?
The question was, were you conscious of creating a new subgenre?
Yeah, because I mean, if they sucked, if they were horrible, I mean, the movie was doomed. or is doomed, you know? So, you know, you got a lot of pressure there trying to make it work, you know? And you got pressure from, you know, the fans saying, you wrecked your childhood, and all this about, like, complaining, we don't like the look of them. And you just had to hold your guns. You just had to, you know, the fans wanted me just literally to take these cartoons and blow them up. And it's like literally the equivalent of like Ghostbusters with the Marshmallow Man, you know? It's like, it just wouldn't work. They needed to be much more complex the way they are, you know?
Michael, you made a reference earlier that you almost think your big movies are going away, or that you're worried about
Hollywood. I don't know. Maybe it's just, you know what it is, because it's like you do a movie, then you're unemployed. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, I don't know. It's just, I think Hollywood's got some stumbling blocks here and there. You know, you hear where the business is going, and there are very few, not a lot of big movies that are made. It's just not.
This is a big summer for movies. Could be a record summer, so.
I know, that's good. A lot of people are going to the movies.
But you don't think that's going to continue?
Yes, it will. Yeah, you know, I it will. It's just good to like think it'll never.
Thank you.
Movie comes out. They're all over the place. They're
so
mighty.
Are there other robots?
Some you won't catch on the DVD.
Are there other robots, other characters that are in the movie for say a frame or two? like a Dinobot, for example.
No. I didn't get Dinobots.
Good. Okay. What kind of Easter eggs are you doing?
They're all over. They're like on different things, what they say, different meanings.
And have you thought about robots, assuming you come back for the sequel?
More than you, yes.
Yeah, no. Absolutely. But what I'm saying is, assuming you come back for the sequel, have you already thought, man, I need to put this character in or this
Sound
character?
Word.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. I called him Soundbite. That was a thing, you know? Yeah, but we can't say.
Do you have one in your mind? Or you have?
Yeah, I've got an awesome thing. An awesome. You've never seen it before.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you. Very much.